Thank you so much. We appreciate you all coming this afternoon and fighting your way through the crowds to get here. It's certainly an interesting environment in which to be holding a conference, and we appreciate you who's worked staying through that and joining us this afternoon. I'm going to be talking a little bit about one of the Beacon communities, the one that we're responsible for, the Beacon community of the Inland Northwest, which is in Spokane, Washington. I'm going to give just a very brief overview of the Beacon program and then go on from there. I have no relationships to disclose. The Beacon program is one of the programs that was a result of the High Tech Act several years ago. Was funded by the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, along with programs like the Regional Extension Centers, the Meaningful Use Initiative, and also some of the educational programs are in place. The Beacon program was designed by ONC and the legislation to be sort of the signature programs, the ones that are really going to show what all of this technology investment is supposed to accomplish, how we pull together everything and really make a difference in health outcomes. There are 17 Beacon communities. We're the one up in the extreme left-hand corner of the map here. We're not the furthest west. There's also a Beacon community in Hawaii, and there are others scattered around the country. Our Beacon is covering an area of really rather a large geography, much of eastern Washington and northern Idaho. If you're not familiar with the area, it's about 300 by 100 miles, largely rural. Spokane, Washington sits right in the middle. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is basically a contiguous metropolitan area just to the east. So that metropolitan area together is about 500,000. And then the rest of the surrounding region is very, very rural, a lot of very small towns, almost frontier towns. The healthcare delivery system is primarily critical access hospitals, rural clinics, small primary care practices, and they tend to refer into Spokane, which has the second largest tertiary care hospital in Washington, a facility of about 630 beds, as well as three other hospitals and a rehab hospital. The specialists, everything is really concentrated in Spokane, so it is the center point for the Spokane Hospital Referral Region. We decided to address that region at large because we recognized that we had a lot of patient movement around that region. Again, with the rural kind of community that I was describing, the rural region, there is a lot of patients. There are a lot of patients who receive primary care out in their rural community. They go into Spokane to get specialty care or for hospitalization, but they come back out. We're focusing on diabetes primarily as sort of an index case or an index condition. We by no means are limiting it to diabetes, but we're using that as our model and for evaluation and quality measurement purposes. What we're really trying to do is assure consistent care for individuals with diabetes or other chronic conditions eventually who receive care throughout that large map that I showed you. It's recognizing that there's so much variability in what kind of care people are receiving. And so we're trying to get a level of consistency where so no matter where a patient goes, they're getting the care that they need. We're also looking at filling the information gaps. Each of the participating organizations already have an electronic medical record system that was sort of a prerequisite for participating in the program. The reality is that doesn't mean a whole lot in terms of really what their capacity is. There's so much variability in what EMRs do, and they had no ability to share information with each other. So we were really looking at filling in those information gaps and making sure that clinicians have the information they need for decision making. We had some specific goals that we're working toward, some of the fairly standard goals, reducing use and costs around emergency and inpatient utilization for diabetes-related complications, making sure that individuals with diabetes are getting the right preventive health services, that they're getting their eye exams, their foot exams, their appropriate hemoglobin A1C tests and so forth, and doing that through the information exchange so that people, all the members of their care team know if they've had that care. And then finally, on the public health side, recognizing, as you heard in the introduction, actually my background is public health, but recognizing that the availability of data on the chronic disease population is much less robust than it is on the infectious disease population. So trying to get our hands around that so that the public health agencies in our area and the policymakers have better information about the characteristics of the diabetes population. Our intervention really has multiple elements. It's an enormous project. I didn't mention that we received $15.7 million. That's the size of this effort that we started in May of 2010. So we're a little over 2 years into this right now. And with that scale of region, that scale of project, and that ambitious of an agenda, there's a number of elements to this intervention. The first thing we did was work with all of these organizations you see on the left. We have participating hospitals, physician offices, some pharmacies, some skilled nursing facilities, and home health agencies. And we worked with them to get agreement on what's important, what data is important for clinical care, what data is important for quality measurement. So, and very bluntly, part of the reason we picked diabetes is that it's not controversial. There's not a lot of questions at this point about what are the best practices, what are the data that needs to be shared. We didn't want to face those arguments out of the chute. Then we figured out the way to pull data together on this entire population across the region. Again, most of the organizations in the region already had an EMR. There was a very high adoption rate of EMRs, over 60% going into this program. So it wasn't an issue of getting the data in the first place, but it was an issue of getting it together so we could actually use it and then use it to drive some common care coordination and quality measurement tools. So the second piece of this project was putting the technology in place to do that. And then the last piece is recognizing that technology is not enough, that you have to have some elements of clinical transformation. And you'll hear a little bit more about that when Jen speaks in a few moments. Recognizing that they have to understand what it takes to manage a population of patients and not just treat the patient when they show up at the door. So giving some training, some coaching, some online education. A little bit different view from a technology perspective. Basically, we've created a hub, a mechanism by which we pull data in, standardize it, normalize it, and into a clinical data repository. In our first phase, it's unidirectional. We've got data coming from different sites that are coming into this data repository. Down the road, we'll make it bidirectional so that organizations that want to receive it back into their EMRs can get it. There's all kinds of interesting technical and policy issues that are raised by that, so we're just sort of taking it one step at a time. In addition to the technology piece, as I said, we've got really the practice transformation tools. So part of this, as I said at the outset, is driving consistent care. We have built into that technology tool a decision support so that an individual on a care team who is helping a patient who has one set of risk factors gets some guidance on the optimal steps to take with that patient. Do I reschedule them at 3 months or at 6 months? Do I refer them into an endocrinologist now? Are they at the level of acuity where they need that? Or do I refer them to diabetes education now? So there's clinical decision support built into this tool that helps that. The goal with that is so that every member of the care team can practice at the top of their license, that they have guidance, that it may be an MA who is sitting down and working with the patient asking these questions as a care coordinator. It may be a nurse, it may be a physician. But even at the physician level, if you think about a rural practice and you think about the increasing complexity, comorbidities, and these kinds of people with diabetes and many, many other conditions, recognizing that the recommendations and the guidance changes around management, this is a way to make sure that all those people have the best, most current information. The second piece of it is a care coordination readiness assessment, which Jen's going to go into in a lot more detail, so I won't spend a lot of time on that right now. But that basically that sets a baseline. Where are they starting from? Also, we've developed coaching and education resources, a coach who goes in and works with the practice to help them with quality improvement based on the information they're getting from the system. Education both online and in person to help them understand how do they change their workflows. And again, it's not just about technology. It's recognizing that they're changing the fundamental nature of their practice away from passively waiting until a patient gets sick and shows up to actively managing the population. And we have found that that's an enormous culture and mind change in many of these practices. So, as I said, we're implementing this across care settings, so that everybody gets the optimal care regardless of where they get the care. Where we are right now, a little over 2 years into this gargantuan project, we're live at about 8 clinics as well as one skilled nursing facility. I say at about because, in fact, we have clinics going live all the time now. So we actually had, we've got 2 new hospitals going live today, so I can adjust the hospital number now from 10 to 12. We have got a bunch more actively working on implementation. Really want to point out that these clinics are on different electronic medical record systems. There have been other speakers here around the conference talking about the issue of HIE. This is enormously complex. As a public health person who kind of dabbles in IT, I probably was naive in thinking about how hard this was going to be in trying to pull data from. We've actually got 5 different EMR vendor products that we're working with at different facilities. And it's not just the different products, it's recognizing that they've been implemented differently and they're getting used differently. The data may or may not be standardized, most of the time it's not. There may be differences in how one physician versus another within a practice enter information. So pulling data out of this ambulatory care environment is remarkably complex, but we're getting it done. So when I say those 8 clinics, that actually represents 2 different EMR vendors, and that also represents 8 different organizational entities. They're not one part of a single entity. There's about 50 organizations around. Oh, and we've also got 2 different, right now that's only one hospital information system amongst those 12 that I mentioned, but there's 2 other hospital EMR vendor. There's 2 other hospital information system vendors we're working with. We've got about 50 organizations around the region that are at different stages of this implementation, and we are already doing a lot of the workflow of practice transformation redesign. Our challenges are many. If you think about the timeline, we began working on this project. We actually designed and proposed the project about 3 years ago now. It was in December of 2009 that this opportunity became available. We began working in 2010, and if you think about all the things that have happened in the healthcare system, it's a remarkably tumultuous environment. We've got all the meaningful use things going on. We have got organizations deciding they're going to be ACOs or moving in that direction. In our particular referral region, there's been a tremendous amount of mergers and acquisitions. I don't know how many clinics, frankly, that we started out who were under one ownership and now under a different ownership, and that has changed their participation. Oh, I'm sorry, accountable care organization. So it's just everybody kind of responding. One of the things, of course, major things that happened since we started implementing is the Accountable Care Act, and everybody's starting to position for that. So it's been just a very complex environment. There's a lot of other things going on. We have had over and over again to stop working with the clinic because they've said, wait a minute, we're upgrading our EMR for meaningful use purposes. Technical issues I talked about a little bit already. It's very, very complex. Most HIEs nationally have worked with standardized databases. They've worked with the big hospitals or with imaging centers or laboratories. Not many have started to work in this really much more difficult ambulatory care environment. And then just the practice issues. I mentioned the cultural issue. We have had practices where the clinic administrators have said, yes, we want to do this, and we've got care coordinators set up. And then the physicians have said, I don't need you to tell me what to do with my patients. So there's just this cultural issue going on. So lots and lots of challenges. But we're getting there. I mentioned we've made a lot of progress. Where we're going next is evaluation. You'll hear a little bit more about one piece of that evaluation project, but we are doing some quantitative pre- and post-analysis on the participating practices, and that's going to extend beyond the end of our federal funding period, which ends next year. We're also comparing to adjacent referral regions, and then we're looking now at how do we move this beyond diabetes, looking at not just other chronic conditions, but other conditions. Back pain is high on our list of areas to address. Also being able to look at transitions in care, reducing readmissions, that's a major interest in our area. And then how does this support alternate payment models? How do we use this to pull together organizations that want to compete for bundled payments or global payments or so on? So that's really our next step. I do want to acknowledge co-authors, many of whom, actually 4 out of 5 are here in the room, Jen Palello, Dan Hansen, Doug Weeks, or Doug's the only one who's not here, Ben Keeney and Doug Conrad. And so just a very, very brief time for questions. We're going to take a few individually, but we also want a lot of time for everybody to talk, and we maybe can take a few more at the end. Any questions?
The legality.
The legality
of privacy. Do you have to have any laws to?
No, and the question was around the legality of information sharing related to this.
Specifically,
the ID. Oh, no, there's actually, we are reporting the data to the Department of Health. Not on a routine basis yet. We're using it more to characterize the diabetes population. We are not yet using it as a registry and traditional means of surveillance where we're reporting individual data. It's more looking at accurate, up-to-date information about prevalence and patterns in the community. So that has not been a legal issue for us. Other questions? It's actually, and Jen, maybe you can address that a little bit when you talk, but she was asking who are we coaching, but it's really the entire care team. So we work with the clinic, we do the assessment Jen's going to talk about, work with particularly the line staff, the MAs, the NPs, the PAs, some of the fifth physician champions to help them understand how they need, and a lot of this coaching is based on patients in a mental home training. So how do they need to change the way they practice as to work as a team rather than as just the physician? So with that, I think I'm going to turn it back to Ben, who's going to introduce our next speaker.